Okay, welcome to our first programme on the Cobden Centre with me, Andy Duncan. Tonight, our first guest is Dr. Tim Evans, who is Chief Executive of the Cobden Centre. As well as working with the Cobden Centre, he's Chairman of the Economic Policy Centre. He's Chairman of Global Health Futures Limited, a Consultant Director and a Senior Fellow with the Adam Smith Institute, and he's President of the Libertarian Alliance. Okay, Dr. Evans, we need some background on the Cobden Centre. So if you can just tell me, who are the main kind of people behind the Cobden Centre and how did you get involved in the Cobden Centre?
Now, I became involved a year ago when an old university friend from LSE days, Toby Baxendale, who's very much the founder and the chairman of the Cobden Centre, when he invited me to lunch. And he said, would I help him take the organisation forward, raise money for it, oversee the business plan? And there are two other people who were involved at that time, the founding fellow, Dr. Anthony J. Evans, now the MP for Wickham, Steve Baker. The question was, would I join them and would I help them to progress the organisation and turn it into a fully fledged scholarly centre and campaigning organisation? And I was delighted because, you know, I've got a background in partly in scholarship, but also in public affairs, campaigning and think tanks. The cause of the Cobden Centre is very close to my heart. So I was delighted.
OK, and what would you say the aims of the Cobden Centre are? There's the Libertarian Alliance that you're heavily involved with and the Adam Smith Institute. So what makes the Cobden Centre different? What are our aims?
The Cobden Centre is distinctive because I think it recognises that, particularly with the recent economic downturn, an awful lot of people, an awful lot of academics, journalists and other opinion formers really fail to understand that the institutional architecture, the underpinning architecture of our so-called financial services sector, banking sector, indeed our so-called capitalism, is far from the market. When you see a BBC interview outside the Bank of England, the average person sees the building and they think, that's capitalism. There's very little recognition that we live in a world where invariably you've got central banks, you've got nationalised monopoly fiat currencies, you've got fractional reserve banking, you've got all these interventions, and of course it raises the question, surely there are major issues here of state failure. People are very quick to talk about market failure, but what about state failure? And so the Cobden Centre ventures into the areas that many other scholarly centres and think tanks have not yet really gone, namely very much looking distinctly at that underlying institutional infrastructure.
Yeah. How do you think the Cobden Centre is going to get that across to the public then, that the Bank of England isn't capitalism?
Well, I think there are several ways of doing it. I don't mean to sound elitist or ivory towerish when I say, but I think given we have limited resources, I think we've got to get through to what I would loosely call opinion formers. So we've really got to get through to academics, politicians, journalists. Now, there are people out there who are on our side and who understand this and who want to learn more about our perspective. And what we've got to do is build bridges with those people, give them resources, give them arguments. We've got to help mobilise them. We've got to stand with them. And we need more. We've got to proactively create more voices for what in this context we might call liberty. Then in time, I think, we'll be able to communicate both ourselves and through those other people to the electorate, to voters. And eventually, I think that hopefully not only will impact what we might call the history of ideas, but it will impact the electoral sphere of politics and therefore legislation itself.
Yeah. One thing I was interested in is in America, we have the Mises Institute. One thing they were worried about was being swallowed by the kind of Washington Beltway mentality. Our problem in the UK is Westminster is the sort of centre of most things. How can we avoid in the Cobden Centre being just swallowed by that Westminster machine and losing our voice and just becoming just another right-wing think tank? How can we keep that freshness and that originality going?
The first thing I'm going to say is I don't think we are any simplistic think tank. I've used the phrase scholarly centre, and I think it's very important. Secondly, I don't actually think, I'm not comfortable with the term right wing. We're a registered charity, and we have lots of friends across the spectrum. You know, we're looking to reach out to people who are not only in various mainstream political parties, but, for example, friends popularly associated with, for example, the Green Left, but who are interested in local communitarian currencies. We're interested in reforming the laws that surround legal tender and, you know, and demonopolizing that. Now, you know, is this right wing? Is this left wing? Well, if you're sort of a friend on the communitarian left, you know, I sound like a left winger. So I'm not comfortable with the phraseology of left or right. I've always said not left, not right, but up. Now, when it comes to the issue of not being inveigled into any, you know, political project, well, it really follows on from what I've just said. You know, we're not a think tank. We're not, you know, simply interested in Parliament and legislation. We're interested in public opinion, and we're interested in opinion formers. And the technology that you and I are using at the moment, here we are, we're doing this interview as a podcast, but we're doing it via Skype. This technology has no geographical boundary. You know, we now are the first generation that are able to live in a planet and communicate in real time and almost without borders. And so, yes, the Cobden Centre, in some way, obviously named after Richard Cobden, UK registered charity, it is in some way distinctly British. On the other hand, I think we shouldn't simply lower our sights to the UK. We're interested in Europe and we're interested in the world. Yeah. And, you know, if there are people listening to this interview in Asia or Latin America or Africa, wonderful. You know, the key thing is to get the sort of breakthrough for our ideas. And if we get a breakthrough, let's say somewhere in Africa, and it works and it seems to be a success, well, that can have a huge impact back at home. So I think we're quite ambitious at the Cobden Centre, and I don't see there being any danger that we're going to be inveigled into any wicked or localised parliamentary or public affairs corporatist plot, if I could put it that way.
That's good. I like that. We are actually at an interesting point economically. You mentioned joining with a communitarian kind of green left and people with different currency ideas. What do you think is going to happen over the next few years with currency? Are we going to get what we want, which is a solid value-based money? Or is the global government movement going to introduce a single world currency? How do you see things developing over the next few years?
Well, first of all, if we look to the long term, I agree with Mises, socialism doesn't work. And if we move to a supranational globalized fiat currency, I think history often does unexpected things to such grandiose schemes. So I wouldn't be particularly confident if I was on the other side wanting that global currency that it will come about. And B, even if it did, being a Mises, I don't think it will last. Socialism in the long term doesn't last. So I'm not too worried about that. What I'm fascinated by is the opportunity to change the terms of the debate. I think that far too many economists and business commentators, financial analysts really don't understand the extent to which they operate within quite a narrow and constrained lobster pot, if I could put it that way, when they think of money and when they think of banking and when they think of capitalism. And I think that there is a general feeling out there that this crisis, this economic downturn, is different, that there have been too many people in pinstripe suits involved with what might be termed big business, far too closely aligned with the state, and there's a smell, isn't there, that these rather sharp pinstripe suited characters, this is a corporatist venture. You know, there's that feeling that there's that smell that something's not right. And if you go back a few years to the anti-capitalist movement and they had their demonstrations in London, I think many of them, they talked about being against capitalism. But if you actually talk to lots of those people, they too smelt something wrong. They smelt big business, in inverted commas, in bed with the political class. So I think there's a lot of suspicion at the moment of what I would call corporatism. And I think that this is an opportunity for us. Now, going beyond that, we talk about debts at 70% of GDP. When you, of course, add in off-balance sheet elements and pensions and all kinds of political promises, the crisis is, well, it's historic and it's beyond grave. And I think that we have some very interesting ideas. We have some real solutions, and that politicians and opinion formers will be interested in what we say, and even where they disagree with us, don't underestimate our capacity to quite quickly change the terms of the debate, to reshape the conversation. You know, I'd like to think that a year or two from now, if not before, that if you're in the know, if you're a journalist in the FT or the Wall Street Journal or on the BBC or whatever, of course, if you're in the know, of course, there are people who say that this isn't capitalism, that to have a central bank is a state intervention. We're not there yet, and it's very difficult to predict how quickly we're able to move there. But in essence, I think that's an exciting task, and it's one that we will succeed in.
I think that's why it's exciting for me, why Steve Baker, the MP, is for Wickham, is heavily involved with us. And I'm really looking forward to his 10-point plan, which he's going to deliver over the next few days, because he might be seen by the Westminster people, and then people might turn to him as a sort of English kind of Ron Paul, if I can be so bold. So I think it's great that we have people like Steve and Toby, of course, and yourself involved. But how can other people help us? Anyone who's following us, anyone who's reading us, how can they help us? If you can just tell us about how the Cobden Centre's funded, and also how people can help us push our ideas into a new age.
Well, we're a registered charity. We're also a limited company by guarantee. In the next few days, we're putting the final touches to our to our bank account, and we've got quite a few pledges. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be organising a membership page on the website. We are looking for people to give graciously to us and to become involved. From a business plan point of view, the organisation is designed to be flexible and in a sense, almost boundless. Yes, we have a mission statement and we have specific deliverables and targets, both for the last part of last year and for this year, and we're on target with that. But we're purposefully designed to be flexible and to use the technology of the internet. So, you know, we're not heavily top-down, and we're not a great bureaucracy. We're very culturally flat.
Yes.
And we are, we're not, and we're never going to be fat and knackered, but we're going to be lean and mean. And that means that there are, of course, a lot of exciting opportunities for people who want to help. Being very direct about this, you, Andy, are a great example of that. You know, you came along a few days ago and you said, I'd like to do a regular podcast series for us. This is something I can do pretty much free of charge, and it's something I want to do. And you've brought the technology together and you're doing it. I have no doubt there'll be lots of other people out there with ideas, projects. Some will come with money, some won't come with money. The key thing for me and for the trustees and colleagues is to have a core organisation that is flexibly open to those ideas and provides people with opportunities. You know, I see ultimately the Cobden Centre being a brand, and that brand can be stretched.
Okay. Do you see us as always being internet-based, or would you do what the Mises Institute have done and maybe have a building somewhere for conferences and things, or will we just be a kind of loose internet-based thing forever?
I don't know, is the honest answer. At the moment, because, you know, in the last year or so, we've been very much a startup, we've had to leverage this technology. In the future, as we become more successful and as people give more money to us, you know, we might, A, have the resource, the money to rent or buy a building, and, you know, we might reach a critical point where it will be to our advantage to do so. We're not there at the moment, and I don't see that as a likelihood in the next year. But I've said we're flexible and we're open-minded, and we are. I don't know what the future will bring. What I'd like to say is I'd like to see how far we can stretch this technology mm-hmm. and how much, you know, we can be a weightless organization in that we can operate in cyberspace. Yes, we do events. We have an annual lecture. We'll have a Christmas reception this year. We do monthly dinners. We do lots of physical things, but we do it in, you know, in places like the National Liberal Club or in restaurants in Westminster. I'd like to see how far we can go with this technology and how weightless we can be. But if we get to the point where we grow and a building and a sort of a fixed headquarters becomes advantageous, well, I have no doubt that I and other colleagues will be open to that idea.
Excellent. I think we've covered most of the things I wanted to cover. Is there anything else you wanted to add for the listeners at the Cobden Centre just to fill them in a bit more?
Well, I talk about the business plan, and that's important, I think, because there is an awful lot of goodwill out there. An awful lot of people have become very excited about the Cobden Centre in the last year. And it's important, I think, that we're clear on what our mission is and that we keep, you know, we run a tight ship. Where I get nervous is when people come and they say, oh, I can do something of this subject or that subject. I think it's very risky, particularly early on in an organisation, to go off at tangents. We're very much in the business of looking at that infrastructural architecture. So we're very much looking at money, banking.
Yeah.
We're looking at trade. And we're passionate also that genuine free markets aid not only wealth creation for people around the world, it's a win-win, but also the free market aids peace and harmony. So I think we've got to keep tightly focused on that agenda, but what the future might bring and where we might go, I don't know. So what I'd like to say to people listening to this, if you're enthusiastic and you want to help, please by all means come forward with ideas, suggestions. Please make sure you come forward with your wallet. That's always helpful. And let's see where we go.
Super. Thank you, Dr. Tim Evans. That was really interesting for me. Hopefully that was interesting to our listeners as well. On future Cobden Centre radio shows, the next one will probably be either Toby Baxendale or Stephen Baker. And then we'll be talking to other people about the future of economics, as Tim was just saying, about money, about the free markets, about Austrianism. And we're going to try to concentrate on the United Kingdom to avoid the sort of US-centric look view of Austrianism in the world. So thank you for listening so far tonight to the programme. Goodbye, and I'll see you again next time.